This is an interview with Henry Ashbaugh for Youngstown State. Henry Russell Ashbaugh for Youngstown State University, Oral History Department, History of East Palestine, by Stephen Consey, at 278 West North Avenue on May 11, 1979, at 3:30 p.m. Now, Mr. Ashbaugh, what do you remember about your parents and family, and what could you tell us about them coming to the East Palestine area?
Well, my father was born in East Liverpool, and he was a potter. He moved up here, I don't remember what year. And my mother and her dad run the hotel down at Market Street and the railroad. Three-story hotel, and the only transportation in and out of this town was the railroad. And that was in the early 1800s. So I was born in that hotel. And my mother and dad lived there. They were married there. And I had an older sister that was born there, too. They run that hotel for, oh, I don't know how long. Then, in my infancy, I had a bad start. I had lobar pneumonia and mock meningitis together. They give me up three times for dead. And I had 75 straight convulsions. And I come out of it. Of course, you know I lived. So they started to feed me iron medicine. What I mean, medicine with iron in it. And we grew up, and then my granddad built the house on 45 West Clark Street.
When did your family move to East Palestine? Do you remember?
They were here in East Palestine.
Okay. You say they owned a hotel?
Yeah.
In town?
Yeah.
Not East Liverpool?
No.
Okay.
No. Right above the railroad track.
Okay.
And by the way, my great-granddad, Meek, homesteaded a farm out here west of town, and 640 acres. He was the first sheriff of this county. He raised seven boys out there and one girl. And of course, they were scattered all over the country. Well, my granddad built this hotel down here and run it. So, like I say, I got off to a bad start. But I started to grow up, and one thing led to another, and my mother was cooking at the motel. She's a good cook. She was a good cook. And everything went fine. And my granddad built this house at 45 West Clark Street, and we moved in there in, I forget the year. Let's see, I was 7 years old. And I'm 75 now. I was 7 years old. Pauline was 12. My brother was 5. And we lived there from then on. That's where we were raised. 45 West Clark Street, where Kenny Rickenbaugh lives today. Well, then we started to grow up. That was our home. Now, we just did the natural things. We had, we started to go swimming, we started to bicycle ride, we started to, I joined the Boy Scouts, and I had an accident with the Boy Scouts. I got run over with a truck. A truck ran over my knee, and I picked my bicycle up and went home and laid down in Davenport. There were no hospitals, no hospitals in those days. So I got over it. I went through it. And later on, when I started to grow up, I met Kenny Rickenbacker at 9 years old. I met him down in front of the hotel, and he explained he was going to the new houses down state line. So I went with him, and I started to go with him. 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and pretty soon I was taking that route myself with a pony cart. You'd go down there and you'd deliver their meat and you'd take their order for the next time for 2 days later, and you'd come back and do it the next time. And I was only 10, 11. Well, I wanted a pony. I really wanted a pony. So the first day the Daily Leader was printed in East Palestine, started to deliver it. I delivered it from the Christian church to the city light plant. Lawtown. That was called Lawtown. For 2 years, solid, I delivered that paper. And I saved my money and I had enough to buy a pony. And I bought a pony. And he was something.
How much did it cost you? You remember?
The pony, $45. By the way, it was today I bought him, May the 11th. I remember that distinctly. And so I brought him home, and he was an Indian pony, and he was rough, and I was rough. So we got along pretty good. And I wasn't too big. I was small for my age. My teeth were bad from this iron medicine. And I didn't know what was affecting me. And when I graduated from high school, I only weighed 120 pounds. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. And nobody paid any attention to kids in those days. Nobody. You raise yourself. You did what you wanted to do, and they kicked you out and let you go. So I was a pretty rough guy. I could take it. And finally, I found out what was wrong with me, my teeth. They were killing me. Well, that's later on. I started through high school, and I developed an ear for music.
Before we get into high school, I wonder if we could just go back for a minute, going back to your childhood. As a child, what do you remember about the being raised in your family, about the discipline? Did you have a lot of work to do for your dad? Did you have chores and things like that?
I worked with the meat market. Uh-huh. I worked there, and they took me on. I was just a kid, but I did my work, and I took this route, and everybody accepted it. And
so most of your time was spent when you were a kid working with the Rook and
Bulls. That's right. Okay. That's right. Most of my time. And Kenny liked me. Big Kenny liked me, and so he was going with my sister, and of course I knew they were going to get married eventually. So I strung along, and But I started to raise myself. And in the meantime, I picked up this music. Well, I was only 17, 18. I was playing in the high school orchestra, which I got a full credit for through my career. A quarter of a credit a year for music. And I was on the music. They couldn't kid me. I played banjo, and I could go, and I knew it. And nobody could hand me anything on banjo. I knew chords. I knew rhythm.
But you didn't start till you were how old? When did you start playing the banjo?
About 14.
About 14.
Yeah, 14 or 15. So, I got out of high school. And I have a picture in here of the 1924 high school orchestra. Well, my brother was a violin player and I was a banjo player. And there was 18 in the orchestra. I knew them all. So, got out of high school and I finally hooked up a little band in East Palestine. And I started to play for dances, professionally. That was in 1925. So one night I was down the valley. We used to go to the valley every night.
Where are some of these places you played? Maybe you could tell us where the valley is.
I can tell you all of them. The valley was Beaver Valley. And we used to go down there to play music, see gals, and we were cutting the country. What I mean, cutting her wide open. But one night I was coming back from the valley, and I stopped in a place called Lincoln Gardens. It was a great big dance hall on Old 51. So I stopped in there. I had another fellow with me. And I always had my banjo in my car.
Hello.
We're going to have to... I walked into Lincoln Gardens, and it was a beautiful dance school. They had a big crowd. They had a beautiful band. About 10 men. And they... In those days, the bands used banjos, tubas, three saxophones, two trumpets, and a slide, and drums, and piano. That was ordinary. It wasn't Dixieland. It was just straight music. So I listened to them. Fella up in front waving a stick and playing the clarinet. So I walked over and asked the fella, I says, who owns this band? Well, he says, that fella sitting over at that table right there, he owns half of it. The clarinet player owns the other half. So I went over and sat down and talked to him. He says, I says, I'm a banjo player. Well, so what do you want? I says, I want a job. I says, you need a banjo. You don't have one. Well, do you sing? And I says, no, I can't sing whole notes. I says, I'm a banjo player. Well, I says, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll come down next week, same time, same place. I'll sit in for you for nothing. I'll prove that you need a banjo player. He says, okay, that's all right with me. But before the week was out, he called me up. He says, we broke up, we reorganized, and we need you next week. And I said, I'll be there. And I was with that band for 3 years.
What was the name of that band?
Cornwall Tregisher. We played all of Beaver Falls. We played Pittsburgh. We played North Pittsburgh. We were all over the country. Grove City College, we played a lot of good. We played demolay dances in the Broadhead Hotel. Tuxedos. We all bought tuxedos. We had a nice outfit. But at the same time, in 1925, I went with a hillbilly band out here in Columbiana. And they were strictly square dance. And I had a good banjo, a hell of a good banjo. And I was tough. What I mean, my fingers would take it for 4 hours and never bat an eye. And I was playing a job out here at Peach Valley one day with a little outfit. And they said, intermission time, come. I walked outside, get some fresh air. And a guy walked up to me, he says, how'd you like to play with a good band? Just like that. I says, what do you mean? He says, I get you with a good band. I says, okay, I'm ready. I was ready for anything. I was 22. So, he says, you come to Columbiana on a certain night and park in a certain place and I'll pick you up. I did. He picked me up. We went out and we played at Midway Grange between Columbiana and Lisbon. Midway Grange. And what I mean, it was a bunch of farmers out there that could really go. They could really square dance, they could round dance, they could do anything. And so I parked down there and here he come. He come down and talked to me. He says, we got a couple more coming in here pretty soon. Well, pretty soon it was an old bald head, not an old guy, bald-headed guy come in there, Model T Ford with the steam flying out the radiator, and he pulled up, turned, parked, got out. And this fella said, I want you to meet Bull Montana. That was his nickname. His name was really Frank Hall. So, I said, I'm glad to know you. And he was a wizard. He was actually a wizard. He had an old clarinet that was an Albert system and about 4 keys left on it. And we set up for the job and he went in and he put this clarinet under the spigot and he run her up and down and tightened it up. But listen, that boy took off. He was something. And I stayed with them for about 3 or 4 years, but I mixed two bands up. See, I got the best out of both of them. And we had a real band, what I mean. We never hit the road. We stayed right around here. And that went on till 1931. Depression shut us down. But in the meantime,
people couldn't afford to even pay to...
They couldn't afford to do nothing.
Did you play in East Palestine on several occasions also?
Oh, yeah. Band?
Where did you perform in East Palestine? Whereabouts?
Early or late?
Well, both.
Well, now, my nephew, Pete Rookenbrod, he's a musician.
Right.
And he plays piano and slide. Well, I went with him in... I come back to this country in 48. I was in Texas for 8 years. And I hadn't played nothing. So I come back in 48 and my wife divorced me. I was single and I was tearing around the country. So Pete, I raised Pete. He was my buddy. So he was hitting the music. What I mean, he was hitting her. He had a band and was going. so the Eagles down here had a minstrel show going, and they wanted a banjo player. Well, I says, I'm a banjo player. All right. Find yourself a banjo and we'll go. I did. $50 I paid for a banjo. It was a good one. So I started to practice, and Mr. I practiced. I worked. I sweat. My fingers felt like they were bleeding. For 3 weeks, I started to tighten up. And I could really rattle a banjo. And so we played the minstrel. And Pete says, well, come down to our dances. They were playing the Eagles. Well, I knew piano. I knew chords on piano. They couldn't quit me. So I started to play piano and banjo. But when I'd go on piano, Pete would go on slide trombone. And we had a Dixie outfit that wouldn't stop. What I mean, we could go. And we went for 6 years.
Did you, in the 1920s, did you ever perform in East Palestine? Some of the bands you played? Where did you used to perform then?
Well, I performed at the, the old skating rink. Did you ever have the old skating rink?
No. Where was that located?
Right where Christopher Courts are. And I brought this Pittsburgh band in there one night, two or three nights. And Peace Valley, Odd Fellas Hall, Randall's Park, up 14, Bowling Alley. They had a dance hall out there. And wait a minute, I can name a few more. And that's where we went. But like I say, in 31, she blew up. What I mean, you couldn't make enough money to buy gasoline to drive to the job. So we just quit. But this guy, Bull Montana, Frank Hall, he was without a doubt a wizard. I've seen the crowd just quit dancing, come up and listen to him. We had Dixie outfit. What I mean, we had a tuba, a trumpet, a slide, a saxophone, and clarinet, and piano, and banjo, and drums. Seven men. And we could really go. We'd go on anything. But this sax player, he couldn't stay off the bottle. Well, he fouled up every job we ever had. But he could go to Youngstown and get the best work there was. The best. Everybody in Youngstown knew him, though he couldn't last. And I was faithful. What I mean, I was loyal, but I was fighting a downhill battle. I couldn't win. And he died in 37, 44 years old. We put him away. Well, then I give it up. I just give it up.
Well, maybe we could go back for a minute. We'll get back to the 1920s and 30s. How about going to school here in East Palestine? What do you remember about schools? Maybe some of your teachers, the discipline, the subjects. Yeah. What could you?
I had some wonderful teachers. Wonderful. And then I had some that I didn't get along with.
What schools did you attend here? Where were they located? Names.
The middle school. That was high school. And I went straight through 4 years. And when I started in there, A.D. Ladd was the superintendent. And he was a fine man. A.D. Ladd was a fine man. I had some good instructors. Father Ryan, they call called him Father. I don't know why. I forget his first name. Ryan. He taught mathematics, and I really loved that guy. And I studied under him. And he was a very slight 125-pound man, and he was had a big head and slim jaws. And he was a character. What I mean, a character. But I really liked him, and I would do anything for him. And the first year of algebra, I flunked because I didn't have a good instructor, and I wasn't interested. But I quit, and I come back the next year, and I went under him, and I made the best grades in class because I was interested. So he was one, algebra. Next year was it's a second year, third year.
Junior.
Huh?
Junior year?
Yeah. What's a mathematics?
Trigonometry? Geometry?
No.
Trigonometry.
No.
Calculus.
They didn't know anything about calculus in those days. Not Euclid, not it was the third year mathematics. Uh-huh. And I had a teacher by the name of Redder, Edith Redder, and she was good too. But by that time I had my feet in the ground and I knew mathematics. I could just see them. And I did good in them. Languages, I never could make it. Virgil, French, Latin. But I had a French teacher. She was a nice little thing. I used to date her. That's the way I got my credit. In my senior year, she and I were buddies. What I mean? And I didn't know no more French than I know today. That's a confession. But it's the truth. I'm here to put down the truth. And she was, her name was Norma Chenoweth. And there was a fella in there, I forget what he taught. His name was Winery. That's Winery. And he has a relative that's a chief of police in Salem today. And he was without a doubt the finest man I ever met. He and I just were like that. And he died at 37 years old with pneumonia. But I've often wanted to go to Salem to talk to his relatives and ask about him because he was a fine fella. We also had a fella by the name of Niesel. And he was one of the meanest sons of bitches I ever knew. If I'd ever met him when I was 25 years old, there would have been no arguments. There would have been no talk. I'd have hit that son of a bitch in the jaw as hard as I could hit him.
Were most of your teachers strict that you had in school?
Fairly strict. Some of them. Now here's what astounded me about high school. Some of them could walk in a room and you could hear a pin drop. Some of them could walk in a room and nobody look at them. Nobody pay attention. They just keep throwing erasers and raising hell and nothing the teacher could do. And that's the way it went. You either had discipline or you had no discipline. And some people had it and some people didn't. As Father Ryan, he could walk in a room and everybody settled down and started to study. And he never said a word, never had to say a word. He was a fine man, and he was intelligent. And he just had that characteristic about him that brought on discipline. And I couldn't understand it. I still don't understand it. And imagine it's that way today. Some teachers have it, some teachers don't. Some teachers get rough. We had a couple of rough ones when I was in high school. Principal up here, by the name of Bottle. Oh, he was rough. He thought he was rough. So one day, he'd take the kids down the office and just beat the living hell out of them. What I mean, he'd take his coat off and go to work on. He was a boxer in college. But there was one fella here in East Powell's team by the name of Russell Van Fossen, who is a sheriff today. And he was in high school then.
That must be his grandson. His son that's a sheriff, right?
It's Russell Van Fossen is a sheriff.
He's presently the sheriff?
Yeah. And he was in high school then. And this Bottle took him down the office. Well, he weighed 185 pounds, and he was all muscle. What I mean, he was all muscle. And he wasn't afraid of anything. Because I knew him all my life, and his brother, too. And they were rough. So Bottle took his coat off, and he was going to work Russell over. Well, Russell just kind of got a silly grin on his face, and he says, okay, start. Well, Bottle didn't start. Why, Russ Van Fossen would have eat him alive. He would have killed him if he'd ever started. And that's the way it went. Some guys, I don't know, some of these high school teachers, they try everything in the book. But psychology. Psychology is what it takes. You got to outthink the other guy. You understand that? We're off the subject.
No, we're still on the subject. But so you graduated from high school.
And, 24.
Right, and then your first job actually...
was with Kenny Rueckenbrod. I went to work right. on a truck.
Right. After high school, were you still working with Rueckenbrod, or did you go into music to make a living?
Both.
Both.
I was in both.
Okay.
And in 30, now I worked for Kenny for 4 years, till 28. In 30, I got an idea that with my banjo, I could go to college. I knew a piano player from Youngstown by the name of Frankie Lewis that was going to Ohio State. He was a good friend of mine. And he was a slam bang piano player, what I mean. So I contact him and he says, come down. So I went down, got a ride down with Harry Herbert. Now this was in 30, and what I mean money was nil. There was no money. So I went down to this fraternity house, and I talked to the guys, and I put in my application, and there was no use to stay there because I didn't have any money. Couldn't start, and I couldn't find Frankie Lewis, so I come back home, and in 2 days I got a telegram from Ohio State. I wanted to go into the School of Forestry, which they wanted to fill up, see, forestry, that's forest ranger stuff, and they said, come down, we need you. I tried to borrow $50 to buy books to start and get down there and get my banjo going and get with the band, see. I could have done it. I couldn't borrow $10.
Your dad, how about your parents? Were they having a hard time then too?
They were having just as rough a time as anybody. Nobody had any money. And I'm not kidding you, nobody.
So East Palestine area, would you say, suffered during the Depression? A lot of people?
Terrible. Terrible. All right. In 31, I went out to an apple farm here. I didn't have nothing. I didn't have a job. I went out to an apple
farm. Where were you living now?
With my sister and brother-in-law, Kenny Rickenbrock, on West Clark Street. I was single. I was 27. I went out to Chick Adams' apple farm. He raised 100,000 bushel apples a year. He had four farms. Well, I was young, and I was full of steam, and I was 27 years old. I was pretty strong. And I wrote out a card, and I give it to them. I says, I'll be ready to come to work anytime you're ready. They called me up in 2 days. Come out. So I started to drive truck. I was a good driver. I was a good truck man. I knew my machinery. I started to drive truck. But mister, working on an apple farm, I was working for 12 and a half cents an hour. 10 hours, $1.25. And I was working hard. That's what put this meat on me. So I liked it. But in a way, I liked it. But I was working my butt off for nothing. So finally I got to hauling apples to Cleveland, Pittsburgh, on their trucks. 130 bushel a load. Load by hand, unload by hand. Trip to Cleveland was $5. Middle of the winter, no heaters in trucks. 32 GMC, 32 Fords, no heaters. Just sit there and take it. And two trips at a shop, which took 24 hours. You loaded, packed, loaded by hand, two trips, $10, 24 hours of hard work. But I mean, you was ready for bed when you got home. I went through that for 3 years. And I was driving the car, I was dating a gal.
But you had a job.
I had a job. I never went on relief. I never asked for anything. I earned it. I didn't earn much. But finally I went to my Uncle Mike. I don't know whether you're gonna talk to him or not. Down Market Street. He was employment agent at U.S. Steel in Youngstown. So he got me a job over there. Steel mill at 57 cents an hour.
What year was that?
That was in 32, 33. And what I mean, I thought I was getting rich. I was in the bucks. So I was going with a gal down here in the country, and she had a brother-in-law that by the name of Dutcher. And his dad was a promoter. What I mean, he was a promoter. So he had 20 gold claims in Arizona. And he wanted to go out there and find out what he had. Well, he got talking to me. He says, I had this job in McDonald's. I was working in steel mill. I was making 57 cents an hour.
You were driving to work every day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had a room in Girard where I was living. That's about 3 miles. So, this adventure sounded something. It took my ear. Adventure. I was single, man. gold. Gold mines in Arizona, that enticed me. I says, all right, what's your proposition? Well, he says, there ain't much money in it, but lots of work in it. So I says, all right, let's go. I quit my job and we're gone. We took off in the middle of January in a 33 Chevrolet coupe. All our supplies, everything in it. We took off for Arizona. We went to Phoenix. We went 108 miles west of Phoenix to Salome. Salome, Arizona. And that's where his mines were. 20 claims in the Harcahala Mountains, south of Salome. 60 miles from Yuma. And it was sound country, mister. Sound country. So we tied into her. We went out to the mines. We had a crew. Those Arizona cowboys folly any place for a couple of bucks. And we started opening up this mine on this 20 claims. We were opening up a 40-foot cut, 3 foot wide and 40 foot high, straight through a razorback. We were drilling 2 foot holes in solid granite with a 2 foot bullnose drill and a 4 pound single jack hammer. And it took it 2 hours to put a hole down. Fill it full of dynamite and shoot. Clean the muck out. Get the vein out. It was quartz rock. We put in sacks, except the big stones. And it was interesting. And it was hard work. But I mean, middle of February was 100 in the shade out there, and then the middle of the day. Nights it was cool, beautiful. That's a wonderful country. We were there 3 months. We went into Los Angeles. And we tried to promote some more money. He needed money.
You weren't finding too much gold. Huh?
We found gold assayed $500 a ton. Well, we put 30 tons in a freight car and shipped to El Paso to the smelter. And as soon as this old man got his report from that shipment, syndicate bought it like that. Just like that. Big syndicate. Big syndicate. Must have been good. I never did hear. All I got out of it was my trip. An adventure. What I mean, an adventure. I have it. That was in 34. And I come back here, settle down. I've been around.
So you get back to East Palestine, and then what's your next job?
I come back here in 50. No.
You're back 34, 35.
Yeah. Okay. And I went to work for Adamson's. I learned to weld.
Things pretty bad still?
They hadn't picked up too much. I went to work for Adamson's, and I forget how much we made. Well, it wasn't too much. But I did learn a trade. I was always ready to learn. I was mechanically minded, and I was interested in engines, four-cycle engines, internal combustion engines. And I went into service in 42, and mister, I went to town there. What I mean, they shipped me through schools that I'll never forget what they taught me.
You worked at Adamson's until you went to the war?
I worked at Adamson's from 35 and 36 and 37. And then I married this gal. Well, I was trucking. I had a truck. I was doing good. So, her folks were kind of footloose. They wanted to go to Texas. Well, what's wrong with that? They went to Texas, and we went to Texas. And I've driven that 33 times to San Antonio. So, we went to Texas, and we had a little money, and I went into the gas station business down there, and I wasn't in it 3 months till the war broke out. That was December the 7th,
39.
40. December the 7th, 40. So it just shut me down completely. So I went to Kelly Field, and they were hiring men faster than they could put them to work. And I went out there and got a job. And I was out there till a long time, then it transferred to Randolph Field, which was West Point of the Air. Well, the draft got breathing down my neck, and I was 38 years old, but the draft was still breathing down my neck. So I thought, well, if I'm going to be in this, I better pick my job. I don't want to be in the infantry. I couldn't stand it. So I got in the Coast Guard as a mechanic. And in 42, August, I took my oath in Fort Worth and shipped me to New Orleans. Took my boot training. Went to boat school and the Higgins Boat School. And then he shipped me to Galveston. Well, I got into Galveston, and we were at the Galvez Hotel, which was a beautiful place, right on the beach. So, first week, they sent me down the cellar. What are you? I said, I'm a mechanic. Okay, go down the cellar. The old chief, he was a hell of a nice fellow. Whitney, Chief Whitney. He says, can you weld? I says, yeah. Okay, come on. I did a job for him. He says, you're a welder. He says, you've got a job. I was there for a year, solid year. Well, I liked it. I didn't mind it a bit. I got home once in a while to San Antonio. And so one day there was a guy come in there interviewing. So he called me up in the office and he said, you're a mechanic. I says, well, I'm supposed to be. Well, he says, could you tighten up the bearings in an engine? Well, I says, yes and no. He says, now, listen, I don't want any sworn answers. I want to know. Well, I says, from the way you asked the question, you don't know. And I says, a poured bearing, like an old Chevrolet, can be tightened. A shell bearing, where you put the shell in, I says, can't be tightened. And I says, how much do you know about engines? I says, I've been into them a few years. Well, kind of pulled in his horns. He says, are you happy here? I said, yeah, you're doing good. You like it? I said, yeah. You want to go anyplace? Nope, don't want to go anyplace. I did. He knew it too. He says, okay. In 30 days, I had my papers to go to Flint, Michigan, General Motors Institute, diesel school. It's just what I wanted. So I went up there and studied diesel for about 3 months.
So you never really were, did any actual fighting in the war?
Oh, no, no. No combat. Right. No combat. No, I was over the hill. They knew it. They were just using me. So I thought, I'm going to use you a little bit. So I wrote a letter back here through a lieutenant to a coal company that I worked for back here. And a buddy of mine, a real buddy. So the answer came back. We need him. He knows his business. Well, in 2 weeks, my discharge was in. So I come back to mine. But I had to bring my family back here. I had two boys, my wife. Well, she didn't want to come back. She hated it. So we come back. We stayed a while. We worked a while. Finally, she went back with the boys. Well, I knew I was fighting a downhill fight. So it wasn't long till I says, I'm going back to Ohio. Well, she says, you just pack your gun and suitcase and go back to Ohio. Anytime you're ready. Well, she didn't have to say it twice. I did it. And in 2 months, I had papers for divorce. Well, these boys were small. They were 4 and 7 or 7 and 10 or something like that. I thought they'll be all right. They're in good hands. So I'll come back here in 48. And I was working. I got a good job. Truck driver. And I went down to see them, took them presents, and went down to see them a couple of times. Well, then I met my wife, 50. We've been married 29 years, just like that. Everything's fine. So, no regrets. My boys are 34 and 37. One's a major in the Air Force, Anchorage, Alaska. The other one's an electrician in Austin, $6.50 an hour, got his card, works for Otis Elevators. Working son of a bitch, he's a working fool. He'll never quit. And he's doing good. I have no troubles. No troubles.
So, you're back in Ohio in the 40s, and you drove a truck again in the 40s.
Oh, yeah.
And after you drove, did you continue to drive a truck?
Yeah, I drove truck after I married this kid. I had my own truck. I drove truck for, oh, gee whiz. And finally, I went to work for the lumber company down here driving truck. I hauled lumber for them for 6 years. Well, then I worked for the city for 5 years driving truck for them. And then I was semi-retired, see. I took my pension from the city and I took my Social Security. Lena worked for Ronnie Mako, parts department up here on the hill. And that was just a part-time job, see. So I didn't make much out of that. I was there 4 years.
How about, we talked about what the town was like, some of the changes you've seen in East Palestine since you were a kid, some of the different stores, and buildings that have changed hands and so on.
Oh, gee. There were restaurants on the front street. When I was a young fella, where we used to stop at night, Les Dornan's Fred Botts, and Hamburger Joints, Busy Bee Restaurants, and oh gee, what a change there's been. Now, Schaefer's house, Makel's Schaefer house, that started up in, Schaefer's mother and my mother were cousins. His name was Hugh Schaefer, and he was a nice guy, and he was a businessman. And he started a restaurant down there in, I wish I could think of that date. I remember distinctly. And, still going since Makel bought it. It's going, and of course Hugh Schaefer's dead now. And the plaza wasn't built. There was a baseball field down there where the plaza is now, and Golden Dawn wasn't there. That was all pasture field. In the front street. Oh, there's been some damn many changes on the front street that I... There was a harness shop where McCammon's insurance agency is, a harness shop owned by Overlander, Ferdy Overlander. And if you'll look on the building down there where Sally's restaurant and the donut shop is, look up in the top, you'll see Overlander. He built that building, and he used to have a livery stable right back of that. He rented out horses and buggies. Well, there was a livery stable right across the alley called Moyne Wilson's. And Kramer Brothers had a livery stable down on Liberty. They rented out horses and buggies. My granddad had a livery stable right back of Kenny's house. He rented out horses and buggies. Well, then Harriet Trucking, they come in there and rented the whole works. And they had teams of horses. And that was a Harriet Trucking, the Kenny's dad.
They started with horse and buggy.
That's right. They started with horses and wagons. And they had teams. They'd do excavating. They'd do hauling of any kind. It was called the Harriet Transfer. And I used to ride on their wagons when I was a kid. Oh, it was something. It was something.
How about the, what do you remember about the Prohibition period during in East Palestine? You know, the
oh man,
the dry period and yeah. The Roaring '20s. And
yeah, Roaring '20s. I was playing banjo then. What I mean, banjo. And I drank lots of bootleg whiskey. Oh man.
Was there a lot of bootlegging here in East Palestine?
Oh. I drank whiskey that was so goddamn rotten that it'd tear your guts out. But one thing about me, when I got enough, that was enough. I never overdid it. That's the only reason I'm living today. I knew right when I got to a certain point, that's it. I shut her off. I've been in the valleys of straight. And I ran around with seven guys. Bob Merwin was one, brother to Paul. Leonard Morse was another one, brother to Bob. All my age. Furpo Heinemann, Don Heinemann, he could have been a pro boxer. He was a big fella. He had a bad leg. He was with him. My brother, Warren, Bob's brother, Fred, he's dead now. Alec Anderson. Oh, we used to have a gang that would, they'd just go out and fight. I had a fight with Bob Merlin one night, and I hit him so hard, and he was so drunk he didn't know who hit him. And that's the truth. Well, he's in a blizzard, a snow blizzard, and driving a Colt 8 four-door sedan with big donut tires on. And he came in the back door, and I was in the front seat, and I just clipped him one, and he rolled out through the snow. He didn't know who hit him. That's how drunk. Now, this is a big confession. But that's the way I grew up. That's the way I grew up.
What do you remember about the police department in town? Was there much crime in East Palestine?
Yeah, a good bit. And you see, when I was young, McGraw's Rubber Company was gone. It was the third largest in the world in those days. And E.C. McGraw was the owner, and he was a fine fella. But he had a son that wasn't worth a damn, a son-in-law that wasn't worth a damn, and they just used the place up. But as long as E.C. was living, he did a good job, and he run, it went. And the police department was one man. No cruisers. He patrolled this town on foot. And this was a rough town. What I mean, rough. Because it was guys that would go to work, and as soon as they'd get out of bed down in Jack Hand the flop joint down there in Tiger Street, somebody else would be off the job, and they'd go in there and sleep. And it was just a flop joint. That's all it was. And that's the way it went. Three shifts a day. And what I mean was some characters in this town. What I mean. And well, you've heard of Gene Austin, haven't you? The crooner? He worked. He went from there to Cleveland, and he made the top, but he died just shortly after. He was a real thin fella, but he had a wonderful voice. I knew a lot of, I missed her. They didn't pull her a punch. But this cop, his name was Grant Wilson. He weighed about 240 and about 6'2", 6'3", and he wasn't afraid of nobody. And he would show up where he wasn't supposed to be. And nobody buffaloed him. Nobody. I don't care if there's three or four of them. And he kept the law.
This is during the 1920s.
Early 20s. Yeah, in the late teens. Yeah. Yeah, I lived through it.
When we talk about the 1950s here in East Palestine, what are some things that stand out in your mind?
Well, they built the schools. They put an addition on that school. I remember that distinctly.
That's the middle school.
Yeah. They didn't have a gym on there. I graduated out of that school. That was high school then. And they built a high school then. And I don't remember much about them building the high school. But things started to advance pretty fast. And when I moved up here, Howard Parker, my neighbor, hell of a nice fella. Big, jolly, rough. Rough. He was rough. Nobody backed him down. And he was a good neighbor. And, well, it was long before that, a good bit before that, they built the post office down here. There used to be two homes down there. They tore them out and built the post office. And then they tore down the Morris grocery store, which was where the Neil parking lot is now. That was a building. I worked in there for a long time. And they, okay. Let's start with the Clark gas station. Market and East Clark. There used to be a doctor's office and residence in there. Big square house, and he was a good doctor, Dr. McCommon. He brought me into this world. He brought all us children into this world. And the flu, the year of the flu, which was 1918, that killed him. He went till he couldn't see the road anymore. He just went. And there were 16 people died here one night with the flu in 1918. Well, they tore his house down, and they put the Clark gas station in there. Directly across the street on the south side of East Clark and Market was called the Pierce House. And it was a boarding and rooming house, two-story, and pretty good-sized place. And they kept a lot of boarders and roomers. Next to that was a B.F. Todd grocery store in a brick building, white brick building, which was two rooms. B.F. Todd was in one side, and C.F. Rangeberger drugstore was in the other side. And I worked in the C.F. Rangeberger drugstore from the time I was a freshman till I was a senior. I'd go at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I would go to school, and I would come back at 6 o'clock in the evening and worked till 10. And that went on all through high school. Well, and next to that was C.F. Woods Feed Store, which was a wooden building. And he sold feed, cattle feed, horse feed, and chicken feed, and all those kinds. And he was in business for, oh, a long time. And he lived up next to where Lester Morris lives today on about 443 North Market. Well, then next to him was a Chinese laundry. Forget the name of the Chinaman that ran it and his wife. And they run that as long as I can remember. And next to that was a shoe shop, shoe repair shop, right next to the railroad track. And John Peterson run that. To my knowledge, I don't remember who run it before, but John Peterson, which is related to the Petersons out the street here. He run that. Then across the track was a tall brick building, two or three stories, and this big brick building south of the railroad track, where the Amoco station is now, there was a pool room in there, there was apartments and offices upstairs, and there was also a Yoder and Chastain department store downstairs. They sold dry goods and stuff like that. Well, then on across Taggart Street was a vacant lot, and then a big house. And in this big house was a residence of an electrician who by the name of Heinemann, and I run around with his son. His son was they were Swiss. His son was a beautiful built fella. He could have made the prize fighting ring. But he had polio. He had a bad leg. But he still played basketball in East Palestine. And then they lived on in this big house, and across the alley was where the Western Auto is today, was a S.J. Lowry funeral home and furniture store. And they were pretty big. They were a good outfit. And S.J. Lowry and his wife were both killed in an automobile accident around 1940. And J. Lowry, their son, lived right down the street here. I don't know how long he lived. But then on down the street was the Fern Drugstore next to S.J. Lowry, run by John Southern. And then beyond that was Ferdy Overlander's harness shop, where an old man by the name of Furch made harness. He actually made harness. And he would take two needles and shove them through like this and pull them through. And he made traces. And he made anything. It was slow work, but it was good work. And Ferdy Overlander owned that harness shop. When on down the street was where Irwin's Justice's Hardware is today, where the
McCommon Hardware
used to be McCommon. And by the way, that McCommon was the son of this doctor. And that was the Hartley Hardware. I worked there two or three summers. And then next was Horace Chamberlain and Thomas Moore shoe store. And it was a good shoe store. It was there for a long time. And on the corner of Rebecca and Market, on the north side, was Harry Ort's paper store. He sold the same thing Blythe does today. Newspapers, papers, any kind of paper.
What was that name again?
Harry Ort.
Ort.
O-R-T-T. Mm-hmm. His daughter lives right up here in the corner. And she's married to Mike Bishop. And that's where he lived. Harry Ort. Then across the street, where the Insel building is, was Billy Southern, that's a brother of John. He ran a drugstore there for years and years. And next to him was Harry Lawrence grocery store. They delivered, Willis Lawrence delivered in their truck. I drove truck for Rookenbrod the same years. we both drove Dodge trucks, old 23s, and that was a Harry Lawrence grocery store. And next to them was a residence by the name of the Failer sisters. Now, the Failers were an old-time family in this town, and they had several sisters and several brothers. One of the brothers was in the Ford automobile business over back of the 5 and 10, where the 5 and 10 is today. That's on Rebecca Street. I could go on and on and on. All right, next. To Failer's Red.
Why don't we go up to the Centenary Methodist Church and then come across the street to the dry cleaners and just come back on the other side, okay?
All right. That was the Logan Building. And I don't remember what was in there first. There used to be a 5 and 10 cent store in there. And on down the street on the west side was a confectionery store run by Adam Watt. Now, he's a brother to Bill and Fred. And Bill was a father to Mary, Kenny Rickenbrod's wife. He was the father. I knew the whole family from way back. Nick Bott was a good athlete in high school, and he was the son of Adam. And Genevieve was a daughter of Adam. She was a good athlete in high school. She married an Army officer. She died here 3 or 4 years ago. Well, then on down the street was Henry Roderis. Grocery store. Now, Henry Roderis was related to Bob McCloskey here in town right now. He was a father of Bob's mother. I don't know her. I think she's still living, but she's in a home, and then next, across the alley from Roderis was Izzy Scareball's clothing store, and Izzy Scareball was an old-timer. He was in high school here, and he holds the only record in high school for the 50-yard dash, because he took it and they discontinued it. And he's dead a long time. But he was a Jewish fella. His dad started to push a cart around this town years and years before my time. And he still holds the record for the 50-yard dash. The lawn down the street was the J.S., let's see, Smith Hardware. Now, Smith was a father to Mike Meek's wife. Her name's Ruth. I believe it was J.S. Smith. He ran a hardware store in Blasco's building there.
Are we still on the east side of town now?
We're in the west side of North Market.
West side of North Market.
Yeah. And on down the street was a Jewish clothing store. Now, I forget the name of that clothing store. What?
Fatchburg.
And then on down was Hellman's. Now, this is Ace Hellman's dad. He had a tailor shop. He made clothes. He was a tailor. He sold clothes. That's where Ace's Sports Center is today. Same building. And it was Ace's dad that run it. Well, on down in where the bank is, First National Bank, was a restaurant. The first I knew, a fellow by the name of McConaughey run that restaurant. That was early for me. But you move on down, and there was a big brick building there, and the liquor store was in one side of it, the south side, and the Daily Leader was in the north side, right where the First National Bank and parking lot and Bloor's Drug Store is today. That was first Daily Leader that was ever put out. They used to put out the Reveille Echo, which was daily newspaper. The Merwins, they were related to me, and I remember the first Daily Leader that was printed in this town. I was one of the first carriers, and I had that route, I told you, for 2 or 3 years. And I was just a kid. So next was called a Busy Bee Restaurant, run by Gus Pappas. And he was a good restaurant owner, cheap.
This is where the Newberry's is today, 5 and 10.
Right along there. South of that a little bit. It was a big building. And where Newberry's is, was a confectionery and candy store and ice cream parlor. I played in a jazz band that opened that place. And all we had was a bass, banjo, and saxophone, no piano. And it was opened by a fellow by the name of Joe Bozo. Well, later on, it was sold to Jimmy Satouris, and he put a beer joint in there. But directly back of that was the Ford Garage, which was run by Sam Fahler and Homer Rookenbrod's brother, Park. And they had the Ford agency there for years, years and years. In fact, when they first started, they sold Overland's automobiles, and then they took on the Ford. Now, that was when the Ford was infant. Well, directly across the street from the Ford garage on the corner of Market and Rebecca was another drugstore run by Homer Southern. That's a nephew of these other Southern. There were three drugstores right there.
All with the same family name.
Same family, Southerns. And then the next to that, where the City Loan is, was a grocery store run by Sam Jenkins. And I never worked for Sam. I worked for most of them. Never worked much for Sam. And then on up the street where the High Edison is was Chapin's Millinery Store. And there was also a Morris Dry Goods Store, which was a brother to the Adam Morse, the father of these boys that run the Golden Dawn today. And next was Rook and Broad's Market, which has been there since I was born. It was run by the father of Kenny E. Rookenbrock. And then next was a restaurant run by Fred Bott and Les Dornan. And next up there, when I first remember, there was a residence, a bungalow-type house, that was a fruit market run by Cassio's, a family by the name of Cassio. And they bought and sold fruit. And one cold winter night, it was 5 below 0, that place caught fire. And mister, you just should have seen it the next morning. There was ice that thick on everything. And it destroyed it. And next was the hotel. No, next was Adam Bott's and Bill Bott's clothing store on the alley. And they sold men's clothing. And they were there for a long time. I did business with them many, many years. The next to that was the hotel called the Thompson, the Thornberry, changed hands several times. And it was a three-story hotel.
Are we up to the Union Commercial Bank now?
Right on the Union Commercial corner.
All right.
And right across the street was the depot, the Pennsylvania Depot, which was a popular place. Well, then right across the railroad track, my granddad, Warren Meek, ran a three-story hotel, which was the only means of transportation in this town, which was a railroad, except horse and buggies. And he run that for years. That's where I was born. I've told you that. And that extended from the railroad track to the alley. And beyond the alley was a grocery store run by John Early and George Eaton. Now that's a story in itself. But next to that was another grocery store, which was the original Golden Dawn, Morse Brothers. Now we're up to the post office, see? And that was torn down in the 30s.
1936, I believe.
And that's when they put the Neil Ford parking lot in there. But the original building of the Early and Eaton's is still standing there.
Uh-huh.
It's a fabric shop.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you, Mr. Ashbaugh, looking back over the years, and I know you didn't live in East Palestine all your life. You moved out. Are there any things that happened in this town that, or maybe did not happen, that you wish had turned out differently? Looking back on the town, maybe some of the decisions that the city made or things that were built, is there any one thing that stands out in your mind that maybe you wish didn't happen in this town?
No, the only thing I can think of is the fairground over I used to call out races. I was just a kid, 14 years old. I rode a horse. And the last year of the fair, about the last 4 years, I was instigating the fair with a fellow by the name of Max Eaton. He was a superintendent. And I used to post the fair around the country. And then I had a horse, and I would go over there. We had harness races every afternoon of the fair, about 4, maybe 5 afternoons. And I would ride this horse around and call out the next race. finished. So that went on till the fair quit.
What year did the fair quit? Do you recall?
Oh, in the early 20s.
So that's the one thing you wish you maybe had stayed, that you
well,
kept the fair.
Well, it was interesting. Uh-huh. It was really interesting. And I rode this horse around, and I'd call out the next race, and I really enjoyed that, you know. But the fair quit, and a lot of the buildings burned down, and then when I was gone from town, they tore it all down and put up the park. Mm-hmm. Well, it was pretty nice. That was a good project, and I was a WPA project, I think.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Ashbaugh, for your information that you've given us.